Hello and welcome to the Bosun's Call Woodworking Podcast, Episode 7. I'm your host, James the Bosun, and today we have for you guest in front of the show, Justin, once more. We have a very tasty beer to introduce to you today. A cool tool as always, and a pirate sailor term, as well as our main topic, which will be woodworking in small spaces. Tips for, let's say, apartment-friendly projects. Without further ado, let's get cracking. Hello, Justin.
Hello. How you doing?
Doing good.
Good.
A lot going on.
Yeah. It's good to be here.
Yeah, and I just want to take this moment to say thank you for coming onto the show and helping me with this. I know it's kind of like I soak up all the air in the room
no worries.
And everything, but definitely like you have been a great help to me and having someone I can talk to and not just be in a room by myself talking to myself.
I'm happy to help. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, so today we've got some good topics. So, but first, let's start with our beer of the episode.
So our beer of the episode today is brought to us by our friends at Lagunitas Brewing Company. I remember having this on tap when I bartended many, many years ago in Arizona, and I've always liked Lagunitas' beers. They always have good flavor, very satisfying finish. This one is the Beast of Both Worlds. I love the art on the front of the dog that's kind of...
It's like Dogzilla.
It is like Dogzilla, right? It's very much a harken back to old, you know, monster movie type movie poster-ish appearance there on the can, which is very cool. It's a bicoastal IPA. Big fan of IPAs, which... lived in the Pacific Northwest for a while, and they love their IPAs up there and have some really good ones. So I'm looking forward to sampling this ware and discussing it.
So it says East Coast flavor, West Coast clarity. And I've talked before about IPAs and how there are some of them that are just a little too harsh for me. And I want to say those are the West Coast variety, if I'm not mistaken.
The West Coast variety are definitely more hoppy.
Yeah. And especially like doubles can get very, like, harsh. I mean, if you're into that. Ooh, that's a nice kind of amber color.
Yeah.
It's got some clarity to it.
Really good clarity for an IPA.
There is some hazy stuff floating around in there, some sediment.
Almost like a citrusy scent to it.
But it is a little bit hoppier.
A little hoppier than usual. That's that West Coast influence.
I would say it's a little bit hoppier than I typically like. It's almost getting into kind of a brown ale flavor profile territory, I would say.
It's got a little bit of a sharp finish there at the end. Like you definitely can feel it for a short amount of time as you drink it, like just kind of sitting near the back of your throat, but it's not overbearing.
Yeah, I don't know. That's good.
I approve.
I think I've told you, I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard this, that the double IPA was invented back in a time where it was very common to water down your beer. So this is what I heard. I don't know if it's true or not, but the reason why they invented the double IPA is it was back in an era where they would typically water down your beer to cut the product and make more profit. So if they're going to do that, they just make the beer stronger. So when you do water it down, it just tastes like a regular beer type of thing. So it had more flavor kind of packed into it. I don't know if that's true or not. Those of you who are big like beer experts can maybe comment on that let us know. Did I tell you we already got corrected?
Oh, yeah.
I did four sheets of the wind, or we did four sheets of the wind.
We did.
And then, almost immediately someone was like, nope, it's three sheets. And I'm like, yeah, I think you're right. Like, four sheets would be completely out of control, but yeah, we got to correct that. All right, so...
Here in South Dakota, we found the fourth sheet.
And it is definitely in the wind.
Yeah.
All right, so for today's cool tool, I picked this up recently. It is the Rockler. It's a several different types of glue-up options. Where'd that go?
There it is.
Aha, here it is. So it's the glue bottle applicator kit. So it comes with a whole bunch of things that are just, I don't know, they always come up with the most innovative, really useful things. So this is a whole, like you can buy some of these things individually, But it's a glue bottle that comes with a whole bunch of accessories and caps, and one of them being a funnel. Imagine that, to actually be able to get it in there.
Yeah.
And it's all, you know, like Rockler Blue, and it's got good stuff in the package. But it all, like, if the glue dries on it, it'll just chip right off. So it comes with a silicone brush, just like the regular silicone brushes that I have come to love because they're reusable, right? Glue dries, you can just chip the glue, comes right off. Instead of being a one-time use, so it cuts down on waste. It also has a glue roller, and it also has a center-finding applicator. It like, has like two little prongs on it with the glue bottle spout in the middle. It also has another one for getting into biscuits, like the biscuit grooves before you apply it in there. So you can sneak that in there and get some glue into the biscuit joint before you apply that. So pretty cool. And it comes with a little bottle that looks like it's almost like a ketchup bottle. Mm-hmm. It's got that little pointed tip on it. And I've been using this. It's really handy. I like it. I like their brushes. I like their little glue pot. And I also use their mats. I'm getting way out there. But they're all really nice because as soon as the wood glue dries, it just chips right off. And it also helps keep everything else neat. So
nice.
Really handy. Not too bad on price. And I've already started using it. And so far, I really like it.
Excellent.
All right. So what's our pirate? Pilot? Wait. We've gone from sailing to aviation.
Right.
Pirate sailor lingo term for today.
Today is parlay.
Ah. I invoke the art of parlay. Well, this has become pop culture now because it's been used in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Yep.
So this is, of course, a French word because we get a lot of words from the French in that era, and refers to a discussion or conference. I believe parlor means to speak, which is kind of interesting because that's what you do in a parlor is you chat. Mm-hmm. And it is specifically parlay is specifically referring to a meeting designed to end an argument or hostilities between two groups of people. Thus, when you parlay, you're typically it's a conference, or you're parlaying when two opposite sides meet together. Typically, this was initiated with a white flag. However, it's not required. No idea if this is actually in some kind of pirate code or not, but it is now canon, at least in the pop culture world. There you go. Parlay. I think I've used that.
Yeah, I have. And then, you know, if you know anyone that gambles on sports occasionally, right?
Oh,
you always hear of, I took this, you know, 4-team parlay. My brother uses some of those like sports betting things and he's always, I got this parlay going on. I'm like, all right.
Cool. So what's I am very disinterested with gambling. What is the parlay part?
So my understanding is it's just basically you're betting on like a combined group of teams. So the outcome and whether you win is based on the contributing performance of whatever teams and their final scores and things like that that you took into this parlay.
So it's like a hedge fund for betting.
Yeah.
That sounds healthy.
Pretty much, right? Like,
all right. So
we do not support gambling on this channel.
Do what you want. You're an adult. If you're an adult, that is. Yeah. All right, so today we're talking about woodworking in small spaces. So I think everyone's kind of, if you catch the bug early, you're kind of in this space sometimes where you don't have a lot of space to begin in woodworking. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there are some things you can do to facilitate the constraints of your space. Obviously, if you're a beginner, which typically you are going to be, right? If you're, you know, still in apartment living or whatever, you're kind of stuck there. There's options. I know some people, both personally and that I've kind of watched on the YouTubes and online and stuff like that, that have auxiliary shops that they go to where that's typically when they have some kind of operation going. So they're basically renting an extra space outside of their small house or apartment So they don't have to keep everything in the one space, but they do have to travel to it. Mm-hmm. And that's typically for work kind of things. Like Adam Savage has that, right? Where he lives in one space and has all of his shop stuff in another space. That's the big downside is, you know, instead of just walking out into your garage or whatever, mm-hmm. you have that. Then, you know, if you're starting out, sometimes it's hard to carve out a space. A lot of times it's like all of our garage space is already spoken for.
Right.
Unless you're playing, like you have to plan ahead for that.
Yeah.
And be like, okay, this space is designated before it gets filled. Cause that's like, there are laws of nature's like, you know, gravity and like the speed of light and things like that. There is also the horizontal surfaces mm-hmm. accumulate until they're completely filled. And so does any empty space in a house, right?
Right.
So it's not just going to stay empty for long.
Nope. It will definitely get filled, especially if you're married. Your wife will find plenty of things to fill that space.
I'm definitely
in a good way. Like my wife's very organized. So she fills that space very quickly, but it's in this extremely organized fashion.
I mean, your house is much more curated. I would say, like, she's got more of an eye for interior decorating.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we have our own aesthetic here. We do okay, but, you know, it is what it is. So on the small space front, obviously organization is important as you start accumulating things. You're not going to have a lot of space for materials. Like, if you have the space, you kind of stockpile stuff, so... And it does kind of limit you to smaller projects if you have a small space. Also, you can't do things like modify your space to fit your needs. So, like, I have French cleats up on the walls of my shop, you know, and I've put in a partition wall with insulation, you know, between the two sides of the garage so that I only have to heat the shop side of the garage.
Right.
If you're in like a rental space, you know, whether it's a house or an apartment, you don't have that option. So you have to come up with other options to be able to organize what you do have. And there are ways to do that. I know I started with a rolling bench for some of my hobby stuff and also a lot of portable stuff. Like everything was on wheels or in totes so I could get to stuff and things like that. Or like tool bags, tool boxes kind of thing. So you end up doing that, a lot of that. It does kind of slow you down, I think, because you have less of the first order of retrievability where you're like, hey, just go get this thing. So like definitely I tried to use bins, at least with clear tops so I could see what was in them and then take the time to label stuff. You will thank yourself later.
Yeah. Ours is just a tote that says tools.
Tools. There's a flashlight filled with jelly beans.
Yeah, and I get to dig through it and try not to cut myself on the one saw that's in there.
There's like half a pretzel in there. No. But yeah, and your projects are going to be smaller too.
Right.
And then you got to not have something for, you know, how much of a mess are you making? Do you have a shop vac or something?
Yep.
To, you know, manage all the sawdust and stuff like that. Certainly hand tools are a lot more small space friendly. So if you're doing something and you have the inclination to do like hand cut dovetails and, you know, you can get a very small set of tools. That is one advantage to hand tools. Like, yeah, it's going to take you longer, but, and I guess that depends on what you're trying to do. Right. If you're doing woodworking as a hobby to relax and it just that's the thing that you have, you know, that is what you choose to spend your free time on, then the timing doesn't really matter how long it takes you to make a thing.
Right.
So that certainly can be. But if you're trying to, you know, maybe hurry up and do stuff, you know, then that maybe changes things or you want to speed things up. Power tools in a confined space. Like if you have a garage, you know, or something, maybe you have a garage that's detached at an apartment and you can store some of that stuff in, then yeah, things that are mobile, they have wheels or they fold up like a job site saw or things like that. Or you get a rolling folding cart for your miter saw or whatever you're using. That's certainly what I had to do at my first house was I had to make sure everything was pushed up against the walls because we still had to park two vehicles in there and it was an older garage. So it was quite tight.
Right.
But, we did still squeeze it in. I even squeezed in my big big workbench during that time.
That's awesome.
But yeah, definitely.
It can be done.
It can be done. Like, you can do woodworking on folding tables. You can do woodworking, you know, on the floor. You can build yourself a little shorty. There's actually benchtop benches, if that makes any sense, where you have a tiny, you know, kind of thick slab workbench that's maybe, I don't know, a foot and a half tall, maybe shorter. And so it's got little legs, and it's just a surface where you can do your woodworking, and it's got some clamping solutions, but it's a little beefy. And you can do it, you know, sitting on your floor. You can put it on top of a table. So at least the benchtop bench has got like dog holes in it, maybe a little vise in it. But it's mobile. You can move it around.
You can just set it on any flat surface.
Yeah, and there's a thing called a Moxon vise, which is basically a mobile vise that you can use. And Benchmade sells hardware for Moxon vise. So there are some things you can do where you need something stable, especially when you're like chiseling down or doing, you know, sawing or something where you can't like hold the piece. You need something to hold it for you, because that's one big thing, is you do need clamping solutions to hold stuff while you work. I think that's one of probably the biggest problems with small spaces is, all right, I need to saw this board in half. How do I hold it there?
Right.
You know, like certainly, you know, you see guys on job sites and stuff, you know, like framers and stuff, they'll like put it in the crook of their knee and like kneel down and just rip and rip through it type of thing. But if you're doing something that's more finesse work, like let's say you're just building small jewelry boxes or something, that's your thing, and you can get that done with hand tools, and, you know, you still need something to hold some of those pieces securely while you work on them, because no way faster to, you know, screw up your cut line than all of a sudden the wood's moving.
Yeah.
So I think that would be something to look into, is to have something, because I think you'll still use that.
Right.
If you built like a tabletop bench, you're still going to probably use that later on.
Absolutely.
And it'd be kind of a cool artifact of your progression through the skill or the art.
Now, could you do something like in a small apartment where maybe it folds down, like Murphy bed style, you know, just like a fold down counter and tabletop bench or whatever?
Yeah.
Kind of something that can be secured up and save space when you're not using it, type of thing.
I've seen some really cool videos of folks that have done it's a rolling work table. I wouldn't necessarily call it a bench.
Okay.
But a work table. And it would like roll up against the wall, and then it would, the edge of the table that's against the wall then can lever up against, so the table top is flat then against the wall, like you tilt it up and it kind of locks in with some toggles, and then the feet fold in, or you can remove like the stretcher, the center stretcher, and then you can take that out and it's got a little spot to hold it and everything folds in. So there's some cool options to do that kind of stuff.
Nice.
And I think they just made that out of 2x4s. Like, it wasn't like super robust or anything like that. And you really don't need to get crazy with stuff. You can build your first workbench with 2x4s if you really want to. And there's certainly, like, you can go with like an English style workbench if you're doing hand tools. And there's a way to build it where it is sturdy, but it doesn't require a lot of heavy material to get that weight and stability.
Yeah.
Actually, it's kind of much more of a lightweight table versus like what I have, which is a French Ribot style, which it's a split top, but still it weighs a lot.
Like, right.
I can barely lift it up on the ends. It takes some effort. Like, yeah. I can kick down the casters and wheel it around, which is handy, but I couldn't lift the whole thing by myself.
Okay.
I could kind of tilt it up on one side, but that thing weighs a lot. And that's definitely for something more advanced. I certainly did par down that set of plans, because if I was going to build it at its full width, it wouldn't have fit in my first space.
Okay.
So I did actually have to modify that for a smaller space.
For what you had.
And it worked out, because I couldn't really reach the other edge of the table.
Okay.
If it was full size. And then, you know, the only thing I would really need that for was maybe a better surface for like an outfeed table for my table saw, but that's getting into big shop problems. I think clamping solutions, having something secure that you can clamp things down to so you can work on that material. Dust and stuff, obviously you can't make a lot of noise, but a regular vacuum cleaner or a shop vac, if you're running it during the daytime, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know, and certainly on the weekends, if you're in like a garage space, I don't think anyone's going to give you too much grief about running a shop vac. Yeah. And I've got my my redneck dust evacuation system, which is, I built a kind of a tray that sits on top of a shop vac, and I got like some PVC pipe that engages in where you put all the accessories and the feet of the shop vac. And so those pipes go up and they hold a plywood shelf, and then on top of the plywood shelf I cut a hole, installed a your typical box store bucket, and then lid on top of that, and then cut a hole in that and installed a vortex separator.
Okay.
So it basically is a mini dust extractor system. Obviously, when you're dealing with high volume stuff, you need the big guy.
Right.
But for little stuff, it works really great, and it's a really cheap option. It works just as good, I would say, and I don't know. I mean, you can send me a more expensive one if you want me to do a side by side comparison to refute that. But I would say, yeah, it works just about as good as now. Of course, you can put in HEPA filters and stuff in some of the expensive ones, but I would say it worked just as good as some of the more expensive dust extractors.
Okay,
that's not quite a dust extractor. It's just a vacuum with a shop vac with a separator on it for like. And basically, what it does is that vortex, it separates the big chips because there's not enough suction, so they fold down the funnel into that collector bucket. So when you open the actual shop vac itself, mm-hmm. there's just a tiny bit of fine dust in the bottom.
Oh, okay.
Because all the big chips have been separated out.
Okay.
And it makes it so it keeps the suction going.
Yeah.
Even, well, if you fill it all the way up and it's filling up that vortex,
it will clog it.
Yeah. Then you're just basically using the shop vac like it had nothing attached to it. It's just sucking it into that. But then you have kind of a reserve, which is nice if it does get full. And then usually, okay, you figure that out pretty quick because it sounds weird.
Yeah.
And then you empty the bucket and keep going. And there's solutions like that can make, you know, a inexpensive stopgap to solve a problem you have now for a small shop and then going forward. I've watched some cool channels where the one guy does small metal work too.
Okay.
And he's like doing it with basic tools. Like he has some crazy setup where he's doing basically a mini lathe, but it's just a power drill. And he just basically is using a zip tie to leave it on, which is odd. But it works, and he's got, you know, little tools. And he's just doing soft metals like brass,
okay,
or something like that. And then like makes all these accents and make these small but really fancy kind of projects.
Yeah.
You know, you can go back to our recommended tools episode. I mean, all that kind of still stands true. Where, you know, your circular saw, your maybe a job site saw, mm-hmm. Stuff that's small and compact and mobile. Will help you out, and some hand tools. And it kind of depends on what projects you're going to be doing. I think everyone typically starts out in kind of a DIY fixing stuff or improving things around the house kind of mode.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where you're at right now in your journey.
Right.
Day woodworking.
Yep. Like even the stuff that I guess would be on my bench right now is all home improvement type. Fixing little things here and there, door frames, doors,
mm-hmm.
you know, just stuff that has gotten wear and tear from the kiddos. Mm-hmm. So it is definitely on a DIY level at this point.
Or just natural like things that happen, like our dog is putting scratches and dents and everything.
Yeah.
And so I'm having to fix stuff. And then a lot of the materials that a new home is made with are very, very soft. They do not hold up to much wear and tear. I mean,
right.
Gosh, I think I caught something on just a piece of molding and it just like ripped a hole in it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe like that did that much damage.
Yep.
And now I'm going back and trying to figure out how to fix that type of thing. But just kind of normal things that are nice, because I think you save a ton of money.
Absolutely.
Versus having like a handyman come out, or you know, whatever, a fix-it service come out and repair some of that stuff.
Yep.
So it's good to have some of those skills. And with
absolutely
with all the online stuff, I think it's even easier than ever to learn whatever skill you want to learn.
Yeah, with everything you can find on YouTube and several other places, you can learn how to do just about anything around your house, especially any DIY type stuff.
Have you ever watched anything on, what's it called? It's Instructables.
I haven't, no.
There's a couple of different, most of them have a paywall, but there's a couple of different sites that have similar kind of things. I think that you definitely get more out of those videos because they're specifically, they're not just like someone showing the video of the thing that they did. They're specifically basically like a course almost. So they are very much designed with a student trying to watch and learn in mind.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, on YouTube, it could be, it's totally kind of random what you get.
Right.
And like, I'm certainly good at seeing and learning from.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends. But, and the quality of the video and details, because a lot of people skip ahead or something like that type of thing. And it's just really a progress video.
Right.
Kind of thing instead of like an instructional video.
I need it to be like Legos where I have somewhat of a picture of what it's supposed to look like when I'm done, and then there's step-by-step instructions.
Otherwise, it's like doing a puzzle without the box.
Yep.
You're like, what is this? I'm
just kind of winging it.
That's hard mode if you want to do a puzzle on hard
mode.
I'm
not there yet. not even close.
That would be kind of interesting.
Yeah, just do this.
Speaking of puzzles, I got myself a 3D Star Destroyer. Totally off topic. I'm like, this is a woodworking podcast.
Yeah.
I got myself one of those 3D puzzles for my favorite ship ever, the Star Destroyer.
Nice.
Nerd alert.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Like, it really is hard to put together. Like, it is like woodworking because it's all through tenonry. It's like a bunch of little tabs.
Yeah.
And you have to, like, get everything lined up just so.
Okay.
Like, it does not want to go together.
Yeah, I was curious about that when I saw them in the store and, like, just looking at the box, I'm like, how exactly does this piece together, you know?
This one's involved. I'm about, I don't know, two-thirds of the way through.
Yeah.
So maybe halfway. But it's fun.
Nice.
So what kind of small projects can you expect to do? I would say, little home improvement things. You know, if you want to add an accent to something, a little crown molding here, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that depends on your space, right?
Right.
And
if you're kind of renting versus owning, right? You can't, you're not going to be doing a lot of modifications on a space that you're renting, per se.
Yeah. So, you'd kind of have to stick to projects that are not necessarily anything that's going to modify the home, and including all of your shop and storage space. But, like, little things, like picture frames and boxes. There's all kinds of stuff, I mean, that you can do. I'm trying to think of anything else except for those two very specific things.
Yeah. Is there something maybe that could somewhat modify the home or quote unquote improve the home or the aesthetic while it's being used, and then be movable or portable in a way that you can take it with you?
Yeah, I think you could do that as long as you're not completely modifying or attaching anything.
Yeah.
Like picture frame, if you get good at making picture frames that are kind of unique, that would be a really good one. Or I don't know, you're doing stuff in the kitchen where you're making trivets, or you're making like a stove cover if you don't use your stove a lot. So you could use it for other things, or maybe just a little shelf that goes over the back of the top of the stove. So you can actually like put some stuff there, you know, like some spices and stuff like that, but it's out of the way.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's not attached to anything. You can take that with you, you know, when you move, if and when you move. You know, you're still going to be able to hang things like accent pieces. Maybe you want to do some wood art. Maybe you're more artistically inclined and you can do something like a wood burn or a carving piece or something like that. I get into wood carving for a little bit and I just have a few things, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like I started trying to carve like my own little chess pieces.
Oh, nice.
I only did one, but it was fun. And, like there's some of those designs. Oh, what is it? I've been looking at these. Let me see if I can look this up really quick.
Let's go to the Googles.
All right. I have located it. It's actually in my Etsy wish list. So I'm probably going to botch this. It's Kamiko. And that is, it makes these beautiful little geometric patterns, like lattices, of all different varieties. And you can do all kinds of different patterns. And it kind of looks, I don't know, it's almost like a snowflake kind of thing. But you typically do it out of soft woods, and it's usually for like box tops. Mm-hmm. We do like kind of a semi-open box. I don't know if, I think it's maybe for potpourri or something.
Possibly.
But basically, it's a whole set of wooden blocks at different angles. Mm-hmm. So it's like a set of different miter angles that you'll plane with a chisel. You'll chisel it with a chisel, I suppose. the ends of the wood down, and then all those little angles will fit together into this kind of geometric snowflake kind of pattern. So it's a Japanese art form called kamiko, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. So that's something that would be really good for a really small shop if you only have a few things together, and you can make some really cool stuff with that because it's all handmade.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's probably cheap stuff out there somewhere, but I mean, the good stuff is pretty flawless.
Yeah.
So it kind of depends on what you want to do, but starting small isn't bad.
Right.
Depending on what your skill set and your talent is, you can do all kinds of things. And then unless you're getting into, you know, big projects, you don't necessarily need to do that. There's lots of very small, fine things you can do to start out with. And I think you'll learn a lot of the skills that you'll develop, you know, like paying attention to grain pattern and tear out, because you're going to get that stuff. And this and that and the other thing, especially if you're using hardwoods and stuff like that, because you'll get a little bit cleaner of a product. And I think people will appreciate that if you're, you know, using them to decorate your home, or if you're giving them as gifts, or if you're selling stuff, people are going to notice. I mean, that's why I shop on Etsy, because the quality of almost everything, it's really kind of phenomenal. The quality of almost everything I've purchased on Etsy or any other site where it's handmade goods is phenomenal. Yeah. Like, it's a little, like, you can tell it's handmade,
right?
But in a good way.
Okay.
And the quality of everything, like, I don't know, you go to a store, like a box store or whatever, and it's just, you can just tell, like, the materials suck. The quality of the joinery is terrible. You know, it's kind of like good enough.
It's the best they could do with the cheapest material and
making it as fast as they can.
Exactly.
Yeah. Versus something like, you can just tell when some care and love and attention went into an object.
Absolutely.
And it just makes it that much better. And that's what I love about it. Like, I got some hand tools online from an independent maker who actually hand-forged them and made them. What did I get? I think I got a draw knife, and I got some leather working tools that are just gorgeous. I mean, they came out with just a mirror finish on them. And then he made the handles, too.
Yeah.
And they're just gorgeous. I think it's a walnut handle. And it's just like, oh, yeah, that's so good. It's so much better than anything else I've could have purchased anywhere else.
Yeah.
Especially for some of these kind of lost art things. Like, I don't think there's a lot of people doing kamiko.
Right.
So, you know, when you see that, it's like, that's really a kind of a unique thing. I mean, there's lots of cool stuff out there. Like, I'm sure you could find something similar, but it's just, you know, and maybe it's lasered, and that's cool.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of laser cut stuff on the market now. Mm-hmm. So it's almost become kind of mundane.
Right.
Versus, like, when you can see, like, this stuff was definitely, like, hand cut, all these little specific angles and put together just so. That's really cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
To see that unique touch from the creator.
So let's take a little break and talk about what's on the bench currently. Do you have anything on the bench?
On my bench, like I kind of alluded to earlier, just a lot of home improvement projects.
Like anything specific?
So I have several doors. thanks to some little outbursts from my kiddos when they didn't like, you know.
Doors that have become windows.
I mean, the Bible says no discipline feels good at the time, right? So, you know, little outbursts here and there, whatever, a door getting, you know, closed a little too aggressively.
Well, isn't that what people say? Whenever a door closes, a window is opened?
Yep, exactly. Window opened in the door.
The window.
Yeah, so just little stuff, right? And it's one of those things that, you know, it's not just them acting out or whatever. It's, again, the whole construction nowadays and a little bit more we'll use the word cost efficient.
Yeah.
Oh, like materials.
The cardboard paper thin, you know, hollow core doors in the inside of your house.
Oh man, my doors, yeah. It's the wind blows too hard and you'll it'll just cave in on certain parts. So
I put a hole in a door like that with hardly any effort. And I think it was just closing it, didn't realize something was in the way.
Yeah.
Right through the door. I mean, you might as well have, like, speaking of Japanese arts, you might as well have like the rice paper walls, because that's what it feels like. Just like poof, right through it type of thing. So
there's a cut. My daughter's bedroom door from where she kicked it or whatever has to be probably like replaced. I don't know if we'll be able to just patch it up. So I might have to replace the whole door. Right. And then you gotta figure out, okay, what door to use and make sure everything lines up right with the hardware and everything like that. So it's a lot of just little.
You could just route it out
stuff in the houses.
You could just route it out and put in a door for the dog so it can pass through.
which I should do, because she always wants the dogs in her room and everything. And if you can't find the littlest dog, usually you can just open her door and he's like, oh, thanks, man. I was trapped in here.
The emotional support animal.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's okay. My emotional support dog.
Hey, that's what my dog is, so that's fine. Yeah.
So, yeah, just kind of around the house type DIY type fix it stuff, you know.
I'm having a thought. I'm wondering if you could improve those really thin, because the problem is there's nothing behind it,
right,
to stop like even the smallest thing, you know, kind of pushing through them. Yeah. I wonder if you,
hindsight, I should have just sprung for the upgraded doors when we were picking everything else out for the house.
Well, but I wonder if you could use like expanding foam or something, because that's all the upgraded door is filled with is expanding foam. So I wonder if you could like make some strategic holes maybe in the side of the door where you can plug it, or you're just not going to see it as much. Mm-hmm. And then actually, I mean, my fear would be that then the door will explode. because then it's not thick enough to actually hold that in. So you'd get like a bulge and all the thin panels.
Because we initially looked at, I think it was like this wood like paneling stuff that we could have kind of shaped to the door and added to the door. And but then you start getting into, okay, is it going to make it a little bit thicker to where now you have problems with the door closing and securing completely and all that? So
yeah, that makes sense. I guess you could do like the little windows, you could do a cover there type of thing. Mm-hmm. But you know, and it's in like, I've been, what is it, in the bathroom, I've been hanging shelves, and then the like drywall screws pulled out, and I got to pull those and patch them, and drywall is always a thing type of thing. But then, and then like the paint in here is so thin, the briefest brush against the wall, it's just like the paint's gone.
Yep.
It's like, I don't know. They move so quickly with that sprayer. But
yeah,
hey, you know, makes it affordable enough we could actually get into a house. So that's not bad.
True. And the other thing that's just has been discussed but isn't necessarily on the bench is we have a covered patio right off the back sliding glass door. Mm-hmm. And we go back and forth of, oh, should we enclose that area or not type of thing? And then what would that entail of actually building walls essentially and enclosing that patio to make it
like kinda, a sunroom?
Kind of like a sunroom, all seasons room.
Especially when the bugs come.
Yep. And one of the houses that was built, like, I think it was just completed last year, further down the street, but same exact design essentially as ours. You can see from our backyard that it has an enclosed patio.
Okay.
So they did that.
And yeah, that'd be nice.
Would be nice. Maybe
at least covered. Covered is nice too, because sometimes it's like in the summer when you get like a summer rain, I love sitting on the porch.
Absolutely.
Like sipping coffee, just watching the rain.
That's my jam.
Yeah.
Like just hearing it and watching it rain and just kind of, I'm huge into that, right?
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
Yep.
For me, I am currently building a treasure chest.
Nice.
Of course, because it's me.
Because we're pirates.
So I could not resist. I abhor using pallet wood, but wait.
Is that pallet
wood? I could see the judging in your eyes. Well, I thought it would be cool. My initial thought on what I was going to do with the wood from it, it's not a palette. Some of it's a palette, right? Mm-hmm. I did get rid of some of the pieces that were really nasty because, as you know, I don't like palette wood.
Right.
And I ward anyone off from using it. However, this was not just a palette. It was an entire, like, frame that was built around my jointer planer when it arrived.
Okay.
So it was a lot of one-time use wood. Mm-hmm. It wasn't used on anything else. It's all pine.
Yeah.
I cut a lot of the sections out that had like a ton of nails and stuff. It was still a pain because you got to go through it, pull everything out that's metal before you get it anywhere near a tool because it will, you know, like destroy your tool. And then go over it with a metal detector and still make sure. And I still missed a couple of staples. So it's, you know, you're still going to have stuff. And then the skids that kind of made up the pallet, finger quotes, mm-hmm. pallet part of the whole thing had been run through. I mean, the whole thing's a factory that makes these things. So it's essentially a metal shop and it had all kind of metal shards and embedded in it and stuff like that. And I used a cheap hand plane that I didn't really care about to just take all that stuff off before I used it on anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I kind of broke my rule, but, you know, it was only heat treated, the actual lumber per the stamping on it. It's only been used once, and, you know, I got rid of the bits that were problematic on the bottom, and it worked out okay. And it's kind of cool because it's got a lot of, like, you know, rust marks and nail, and, like, that's some of the appeal to
right, yep.
maybe using pallet wood. Certainly in some parts of the state, you'll find hardwoods in a pallet, and you're like, how could they use this for
yeah.
a pallet? And it's like a big chunk. It's hard to not want to turn that into something cool.
Exactly.
But stay away from it because a lot of it's chemically treated,
mm-hmm.
Especially if it's overseas. I think it's required to be. And it's just drugged through all kinds of nasty stuff. Like, you just imagine every, you know, oil puddle and, you know, mm-hmm. puddle of something. And the worst part is sometimes the metal shavings because it's
yeah.
so far embedded into the metal or, sorry, into the wood. And it's just going to chew your tools to bits, you know,
yeah.
if you're running across a planer or a jointer. And I knew this, and that's why I used my really cheap, like seriously, like a $20 hand plane, like a jack
yeah.
plane from a box store. And I use it for really rough work because I don't care
mm-hmm.
about it. Like, I can chip that blade to bits and
yeah.
I don't care. I'll put it back on my Tomek, and it's a softer blade, so it doesn't stay sharp very
right.
much for very long anyway. But anyway, I had this huge pile of pine, and I'm like, what am I? And it's all like, you know, full of rust and nail holes and screw holes and stuff. And I'm like, that would look really cool as a
yeah.
pirate chest. It just looks beat up,
heck
you know,
yeah.
kind of thing. And it's been a process. So I've got some of the carcass already assembled, and I kind of tried some new stuff on it. So it's been fun. It's really just been kind of a sidetrack project.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes it's fun to do that so that you can regain some energy. Energy? What's
energy?
Energy. Yeah, no, so regain some energy for the rest of the projects. It's kind of nice to have a little breakout thing. But
yeah, it looked really cool when we went out there and took a look at it. It looked good.
The illusion is complete, then,
yeah.
because I can see the areas, but it's not supposed to be anything super special.
Yeah.
I put a ton of effort into it. It's a very steep point of diminishing returns. All right, back to the last bit of this. So, sharing insights on creating functional workshop in a small space. Kind of a wrap-up, I guess.
Yep.
I would say finding something that's sturdy enough for you to clamp stuff down to, and then kind of designating a space, whether that's in a garage that you have or in a closet, in my case it was at one point, where you can store everything.
Mm-hmm.
Also having some good storage options, i.e. if you have some decent chisels, like having a tool roll or something to store them in so that they stay sharp and protected when you're not using them,
because
mm-hmm. You're going to be throwing them in tool bags and all kinds of stuff. The chisels that I purchased had little silicone end covers, and I've kept those, and I also got a tool roll for them. So they have stayed very, very nice.
Okay.
So take care of your tools. And, you know, if it's like little stuff, kind of how I started with just boxes and frames and things like that, you know, just keep the small scraps that are useful. Don't go too crazy with stuff. It's hard to let go of scraps because mm-hmm. you're like, this could be something.
Yeah.
Like, what? What are you going to make a, you know, I don't know. Maybe you're into making dollhouse furniture, in which case, save every toothpick size.
Yeah.
I mean, I save everything because I use it for all kinds of stuff. Yeah, and find out whatever your thing is that's going to kind of guide you along that journey as far as like what tools you're going to purchase. My advice is do not purchase a tool until you have a project to use it on because you can go a little bit overboard purchasing things you don't quite need yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, have some good storage options. Have kind of a designated space to kind of store away that stuff, and then also a space that you keep relatively clear so you can kind of my first shop was, I called it the Transformer shop because it literally like hugged the walls and you only had like, I don't know, maybe 4 feet on each side mm-hmm. and everything had to go in that four, like wraparound horseshoe of 4 feet, you know, minus the door and where the furnace was and stuff like that. And then it all like popped up and it had wheels and it folded out. And I have like a before and after picture.
Yeah.
It's totally a different garage, you know, before and after. It's like putting things on wheels and stuff. And it just kind of depends on what you're doing and how much space you have. And there's 1,000 different ways. It's just like woodworking itself. There are so many ways to solve that problem. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the fun of it is figuring out like, here's my problem. Where's the solution? And brainstorming it. And,
right.
And all that good stuff. So, you know, have fun with it. And once you figure out kind of what it is that you're really into, then you can start, you know, slowly purchasing things and yep. moving towards that. Be nice. Make sure you're cleaning up after yourself. Don't leave like splinters and sawdust all over the yep. place. Like, I don't know why I'm picturing like people just doing woodworking like in the middle of their living room at their apartment.
Oh, I'm sure it happens.
I'm sure it happens. Yeah. Yeah. No, like
we're picturing it because it happens
yeah.
somewhere. Somewhere
oh
out
my
there
gosh.
It happens.
Okay. So I'm thinking about my apartment that I had where I actually had a paint booth in the outside tiny closet. And I mean, this thing was like the size of a coffin.
Yeah.
But I had a little table in there and I had a heat lamp and I had like a fan and just a backstop where I could rattle can stuff for my models and
yeah.
stuff like that. Cause I build models too. So that's my small, I don't have to make doll furniture. I already make models. And then everything else was kind of just hidden away or I would trek over and visit my dad's shop and I would build stuff. Oh, that actually, you know, that occurs to me. We haven't talked about is maker spaces.
Okay.
So these things are springing up all over the place.
Yeah.
They're kind of a business thing and it's kind of like a gym membership,
mm-hmm.
Where you get to, I don't know, I've never been a member of one of them. So if somebody has, they can comment on how that works. But essentially from what I understand, it's basically a shared space, where you go into it and there's a lot of tools available to you that you wouldn't otherwise have access to.
Nice.
And you can go in and use those things and, it's a great place to go and use stuff. And learn how to use tools, because I think they also have people there that will show you how to use it and safely. And I'm sure there's a whole bunch of waivers that you have to mm-hmm. sign in order to use them at all.
Right.
So if you lop your arm off,
yeah. Like,
sorry, buddy, that's on you.
Yep. You signed this saying you can't sue us.
Yeah, we'll make you a very nice peg leg.
Yeah.
Out of mahogany. But that's
there was
also
actually
thing.
One of those in Arizona before I left Arizona. There was one that was not necessarily a woodworking uh-huh. type, but that there was that model for it was a mechanic shop.
Oh,
so
nice.
You could actually work, use, rent tools from them, whatever, have a use, utilize a little, pay to utilize a little bay or whatnot and do basic mechanic stuff or whatever kind of was your level of expertise, so to speak, but it gave mm-hmm. you this garage space and these tools to use. So like I saw it had opened up and kind of like was intrigued like, oh, that's great. And so, yeah, to hear about that. Yep. I've seen things like this popping up where you just, yep, pay a membership or a fee or whatever. And you have access to some stuff and you don't have to keep it at your home. You don't have to store it. So depending on where you live as well,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe a smaller space is your only option based on where you choose to live in the U.S. But
certainly, yeah. And I know that most maker spaces really kind of started off with some of the newer ways to work mm-hmm. with materials. So they have like, you know, a CNC or a laser cutter
okay.
engraver and 3D printing.
Nice.
When it was starting up, a lot of the maker spaces included stuff like that mm-hmm. where it's come, you know, come here and create and that kind of thing.
Yep.
Certainly less liability, maybe, because power tools, right? If you haven't grown up with them and stuff like that, or been trained properly on the safety and stuff, I could see there being a lot of liability issues with that. But also, I would, you know, you could probably go in for a class and then maybe ask about access, you know, here and there. Because you obviously have to have time to work on whatever your project is for the class.
Oh, I'm sure.
And it gives you access and then also training on how to use all of those tools and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That could also go a long ways in informing you on what your preferences might be when it comes time to purchase said tool.
Yep.
So I think we'll end it there.
Okay.
That's Sounds good, like, smattering of information for if you got a small space. You know, just start small. That's basically how it goes. And let your heart guide you in your woodworking journey. So
your space can grow as your expertise grows.
Indeed. Indeed it can. Yeah. Also, will your honey-do list?
Yep.
You've been warned.
Yep.
All right. Well, we thank you as always for listening. You can find us on bosunscall.com. You can find us on Patreon at bosunscall /Patreon. I got to really figure out what that is. If you search up Bosun's Call, you'll find us. If you'd like to become a member and support the show, we thank you very much for listening as always, and we'll see you next week. Have a good one. Bye.